Good evening and welcome to The Late Debate. I'm Katie Hannan, and joining me in studio tonight I have a former Fine Gael Dublin City Councillor, Paddy Smith, Micheál McDonagh, Sinn Féin Councillor and former Lord Mayor of Dublin, Oisín Coughlan, CEO of Friends of the Earth, Pat Carey, former Fianna Fáil Minister of State, Fergus Finlay, Irish Examiner columnist and former Labour Party advisor, and Mary Minahan, Assistant News Editor at The Irish Times. Now, we want to hear from you, so do please get in touch. You can text us on 51551, email Late Debate at rte.ie or tweet to at Late Debate RTE. Now, we'll be bringing you the latest from that big debate over in the TV studios here in Montrose this evening as we go on. But first, I want to have just a very quick look back at the latest developments in this campaign. Of course, now just three more days of campaigning left before we go to the polls. Here's what was happening today.
The conventional wisdom in relation to Sinn Féin is that they always start high. But here, they have maintained their momentum. They started high and they've gone even higher. There's a huge change mood out there.
It's actually down in the Electoral Act 1992 that if a candidate dies after the nominations close, there's special provisions that kick in.
The earliest possible date I would anticipate, subject to the Minister's direction, would be maybe the 28th or the 29th of February.
There are discussions going on in the Attorney General's office tonight that is looking at the possibility of holding that vote on Saturday after all. And that is because there is legal argument there that says in the Constitution it states that an election has to be held within 30 days of the dissolution of the Dáil.
And that was Micheál Lehane there finishing our montage, because of course that was the big story rolling all day. What was going to happen in Tipperary? That very sad, we have to acknowledge, and condolences to Maurice Gehan's family of that very sudden passing. But it did throw the cat among the pigeons, as it were, for election planning, Mary. But it sounds like tonight now we might be back on course.
It seems so. The Attorney General's office is considering this legal argument, and an order would need to be signed by the Minister for Local Government, taking into account that a deceased person's name is on the ballot paper. And Matty McGrath, the independent candidate, has been warning that he would take legal action if the poll didn't go ahead in Tipperary on Saturday. And I suppose, you know, the alternative is the entire result could be put into question right across the country if we did have to wait until the 28th or the 29th for a poll in Tipperary. So notwithstanding, as you say, the esteem with which Maurice Skehan was held and the sympathy that's poured out towards her family and friends, I suppose there would be a desire to get this resolved and for it to go ahead on Saturday.
OK, well, we'll wait and see if that happens. Now, let's talk for a moment about that poll. Mary, I suppose it wasn't a massive shock, because all the polls we have seen since the start of this campaign were bringing us really to this point. Yeah. But I suppose those figures in the front of the Irish Times this morning are really quite extraordinary on the Irish political landscape.
Yeah, I mean, there were a few straws in the wind, Katie, you're right, but seeing those figures so bluntly now, with Sinn Féin surging up 4 points to 25, sitting at the top of the pile, Fine Gael slumping down 3 to 20%, and Fianna Fáil still in a respectable position, I suppose, at 23, but down to very unusual figures on the Irish political landscape. And I suppose it makes me think that Sinn Féin is a kind of a marmite party in this poll. It's surged, as I say, with a quarter of all voters now saying that they intend to vote for the party. But at the same time, Sinn Féin is attracting the highest negative rating. So 36% of people are saying they don't want that party in government. And I suppose you'd want to say that Fine Gael wasn't far behind that, with almost a third of all voters, 32%, saying they didn't want to see Fine Gael in government after the next election. But there's no doubt the momentum now has come behind.
And really striking in those figures is the demographics that traditionally would have been very reluctant to say they were voting Sinn Féin, and are now moving in considerable numbers towards Sinn Féin.
That's right. It's not what you'd think of as a youth quake. It's not, you know, young people coming in and voting for the first time. It's a more mature audience, if you like. Although probably we should stress that the coalition preferences are also really interesting in the poll. And narrowly, the most favoured option is a coalition between Fianna Fáil, the Greens and Labour. So you'd have Fianna Fáil 23% in this poll, the Greens on 8%. 5% and Labour on 4%. So, you know, I think the big story is kind of the Sinn Féin surge, the Fine Gael slump, and other things that we would have looked for, like a green wave, not quite materialising. So I think probably a bit of disappointment in those quarters.
It is 1992 all over again, isn't it?
Well, it is in one way. I mean, Mary stole the phrase that I've been trotting around all day. It feels like Marmite Mary Lou to me, because like, you either love her or hate her. I've been on the doorsteps a bit, and you meet people who are absolutely dyed-in-the-wool committed to voting Sinn Féin, but you also meet people who are terrified of them, absolutely terrified of them, on economic grounds and all sorts of other grounds. What I find very surprising, not, you know, it's only in Egypt would disbelieve the polls, but the 92 surge had a context. You know, Dick Spring had been up to that time routinely described as the real leader of the opposition, etc., etc. There had been the election of Mary Robinson as president. It had been an exciting 2 years, whereas Mary Lou's last 2 years, very poor presidential election, very poor European election, very poor local elections. And people were beginning to say, is she a flash in the pan? Is she a busted flush? Is it over? And suddenly she's turned it all around, and looks like perhaps topping the poll at the end of this election. Looks like maybe, I mean, on the figures that were published today, Labour could lose seats, the Greens will hold their own, Fianna Fáil could lose seats, Fine Gael could lose seats, and Sinn Féin will at least double their seats. So they will be the winners of the election. How that helps us in terms of forming government is, I suppose, a separate question. But it has been an absolutely remarkable and completely unpredictable. If there is a commentator out there who says, I saw this coming, I will tell them he's a chancer.
Micheál, did you see this coming?
No.
Well, we know they didn't, because if they had, they wouldn't be running as few candidates as they had.
42 candidates.
You know, I mean, everybody is aware that you can only plan an election on the basis of the most recent elections and, you know, projections and so on. And, you know, the public mood is often difficult to gauge. But, you know, I think we have to put this in context. You know, obviously we're discussing the immediate, but let's not forget, since the last general election, around half the electorate have not been voting Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil. And that was a huge development. So this is a follow-on from that. And I think what has emerged, and again, sometimes we forget, in that 2016 election, Sinn Féin was in fourth place. The Labour Party was still there as the third largest party. We've been fighting this election, Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, Sinn Féin. That's a first. And you also have, as I said, the 50% of the electorate who aren't Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael. So that fell into place, I think. And I think we also caught the mood. The poll, in one way, is not a surprise, because it does reflect what we have been getting on the doorsteps, that people want change. They're very dissatisfied with what we've had for the past 4 years. And Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, two sides of the one coin, and we need change. And Sinn Féin is that change. So that's what we have received at the doorsteps.
OK, can I maybe just before I'm going to go to now, change was actually the first issue. I know you saw the very start of that debate before we came into studio. But before I do, what do those three leaders have to do tonight? Like, what are they gone into that studio to come away with tonight? Oisín, what?
I think Mary Lou's in a strong position. I mean, I think she probably would have, you know, she'd prefer to be at home and be able to be the martyr again. But actually being in studio, she gets to put forward her platform. And even if they both gang up on her, there's a chance that could backfire. So I think she has the easier job just to stand strong and put forward her platform. They have a trickier manoeuvring. They don't want to appear like, if they appear like they agree too much, that just reinforces her change appeal. So they're relying, I guess, on the presenters putting her under pressure on the specifics of her policies and her not being able to answer. But she's proved herself a capable debater so far. So I think she's in a not quite a win-win position, but I think the odds are in her favour tonight, even though she's, because there are more against her than for her in the debate.
Yeah, Pat Carey, Micheál Martin is going in there to try and convince people that after 14 years in cabinet, 4 years supporting this government, that he is the agent of change.
I was in cabinet too, by the way, just not Minister of State only. But this is not a slow burner. It's been coming for a good 10 years. The shape of Irish politics started to change after the 2011 election. There's no doubt about that. Now, we're never going to see Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael in the same strength as we did years ago. To cut to the chase, Leo has had an appalling start. I mean, that incident of the man in the tent,
the homeless man who was injured in that terrible incident, the first week of the campaign,
Drogheda, all of those, they just were not what he was expecting. Absolutely no doubt about that. So I think he was on the back foot from day one and he hasn't recovered from it.
But come back but to Micheál, what does Micheál need to do tonight?
He has to be much more specific, much more definitive and look into the future. I mean, look, we've said over and over again, look, we made a hames of lots of things, but look, we're prepared to put our shoulder to the wheel, or he's prepared to say it, he should be prepared to say it, put your shoulder to the wheel and we'll start changing things for the better. That's what I picked up on the doors for the last couple of weeks.
OK, Paddy, what does Leo Varadkar need to do?
Well, the Taoiseach correctly used the analogy of looking at people wanting change. You know, there's clearly an appetite out there, and he used the examples of Brexit and Trump. And, you know, people in Britain voted for Brexit, a lot of them, you know, really just voted because they wanted a change in circumstance, and we can see how that's working for them. People in America as well voted for something different, wanted some change.
So,
and again,
he's going in there saying, "Be careful what you wish for."
Well, absolutely. Well, what do we want change from? We want change from a stable, growing economy. We want change from practically no unemployment. We want
change from homelessness, from hospital trolleys, unaffordable rents. From people with several jobs and unable to put a roof over their heads. That's what we want change from.
And the government have active programs to address these problems. But they can't just be solved with empty promises.
They're not empty promises, they're very clear.
Well, Mary Lou...
What Leo needs to do and what Micheál needs to do and which they have failed to do is to put forward their programs that are clearly anyway a change from what we've got for the past four years.
With respect, Micheál, Mary Lou was asked where the extra workers are going to come from to build these 100,000 houses that you're promising. She completely sidestepped it. She could not answer where the workers were going to come from or where the workers that would be required to build these extra 100,000 houses were going to come from. She completely sidestepped it, dodged it and started talking about increasing commercial stamp duty. She had no explanation for this. This is one of the main tenets of your management.
Okay, I know, because I do want to get to the actual thing. So just before we go, because I know you've prepared Dick Spring for many moments like this. What's the advice you would give to a party leader walking into this?
The two men in the studio have to go at each other as well as Mary Lou. They really have to go into a debate like this completely gender blind. You can't win a debate like this except on substance and, you know, so on. And I think it has played that way. Leo started by having a go at Micheál and then having a go at Mary Lou. Micheál, more than Leo, concentrated his fire on Mary Lou and Sinn Féin, and she's fought back against the two of them. She started really nervously, but she got her composure very quickly, got into her stride very quickly. She took a hit, I think, quite a sizable hit on the Special Criminal Court thing, which she just looked like somebody who was being shifty and evasive when a simple yes or no would have done the trick. I think Paddy's right. I think, putting bias aside, I think Eoghan O'Brien would probably be the best housing minister we have. Yeah. But her answer on housing was poor. Yeah. You know,
Okay, we'll hold off because let's play people. We'll first go to, I think the first exchanges were about this key theme that has dominated the campaign, and we've just talked about it here, change. So let's hear what their opening remarks on that were.
But bear in mind, all change isn't change for the better. We saw in Britain with Brexit, people voting for change, they got Brexit. We saw Donald Trump being elected in the US. That's not the kind of change we want. We want change for the better, not Fianna Fáil's change. Fianna Fáil hasn't changed. It is the same old Fianna Fáil. They will wreck the economy again. And you will get change with Sinn Féin, but it'll be change for the worst. Okay. Change that risks your job, your pension, Martin, your income and your business.
What we want to do now, in terms of health, for example, is to bring up about real, immediate, urgent change in terms of getting public patients off waiting lists, in terms of hiring more health professionals, and likewise in terms of housing. The people want change. Why? Very little impact on homelessness over the last number of years by Fine Gael-led governments. Mm-hmm. Very little impact in terms of affordable housing for young people who cannot currently afford to buy houses.
Everywhere that I have gone, people have said to me that they recognise that Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael essentially identical parties have had it all their own way now for almost a century. And the alternative has to be a party in government that unambiguously stands up for the citizens, that isn't captured by power brokers in the state, by vested interests, by golden circles, which has been the case with Micheál Martin and Leo Varadkar.
Well,
and
we might hear
it also should be borne in mind that these two men have been in government together for the last 4 years. So to suggest, as Micheál Martin attempts to, that he is a face of change is frankly not credible.
Mary Lou MacDonald there, of course, saying that for Micheál Martin to suggest he's the face of change is not credible. And this is a huge difficulty that Fianna Fáil are having.
Yes, I think, you know, Leo Varadkar, I think you probably heard there, he was sort of rushed and slightly breathless to begin with. And I suppose his task there is to make stability and the status quo look attractive, and that's very difficult. Whereas Mary Lou MacDonald and Micheál Martin are both able to describe themselves with varying degrees of success as candidates for change. And you hear Mary Lou MacDonald using those phrases like vested interests and golden circles, and it's not credible that Micheál Martin could describe himself as an agent of change. And I thought what was very interesting was she said she let the various permutations that could happen after the election sit, and she didn't rule out voting for either Leo Varadkar or Micheál Martin as Taoiseach. So that's obviously one.
She can't really, though, can she?
Well, no.
She's credible as somebody who wants to go into government.
And Micheál Martin crunched the numbers a bit, which I thought was interesting, and he said, you know, Fianna Fáil has 84 candidates and Sinn Féin only has 42 candidates. So I think, you know, some people going to the polls might not be aware of the numbers, and yes, if Sinn Féin was doing this again, they might run more candidates, but as you say, Micheál, I suppose you look at the position when you're, you know, when they look back over their local European elections and their presidential showing, and it wasn't a good day for them. So that is why they don't have so many candidates.
Okay, yeah, Pat.
Certainly in the early part of the program of the debate, I honestly think the listeners at home and the viewers, not more of this. There is no great evidence that there's anything new coming out tonight, unfortunately. And I think that's not going to be helpful to any of the three, to be honest about it. I think there is an opportunity for Mary Lou to be very specific, in particularly in the housing proposals that they have, I think, which are interesting. But I'd love to see the implementation plan, as I would from Micheál Martin as well.
I do wonder. I mean, people like ourselves that go into studios and have to read things and study them, want a grasp of the detail, want to see exactly the whites of the eyes of all these policies. But in general, is there not a sense that people just want a feeling? They want to have a sense of, first of all, I am fed up with this. And my sense is that fella, Ono Brin, seems to know what he's talking about.
And that somebody's understanding.
And I think that's really powerful. I think it's more than just a feeling. And without, you know, and you're right, people, they don't have the time to go into detail and that experts would do. But it is more than a feeling, because it's also about...
Well, you have to look confident, obviously, when you're presenting
your... Yes, of course. But it's also about, I think people are aware, you know, there is an ideological block in this the outgoing government to public housing, to social housing, to the provision of resources and means to local authorities to build council housing in the way that was done for decades under previous governments. An ideological...
Which I'm sure Paddy's going to jump in here now.
That's not entirely fair.
The reason for this is because of the interests that they represent. They represent developers and landlords.
I agree with you to some extent. There was an ideological block. And I think if there is a feeling in the country, that certainly that I picked up, is one of absolute disgust at the failure of the outgoing government in relation to housing and homelessness. And they will be punished for that, there's no doubt. At the same time, it's only fair to point out that this started with Charlie McCreevy. Charlie McCreevy was the one who decided
Absolutely.
That the private sector were the people who could build houses, and that had nothing to do with the state anymore. And it has been a long time eroding that whole business. Fianna Fáil, I have to say, amazed me. I did meet a woman in Shankill. I was out canvassing for Juliet O'Connell, the Labour candidate, and I met a woman. I met a woman at the door, and she said, to be honest with you, she said, I haven't made up my mind who to vote for. I'm not voting for Rip Van Winkle.
And I said, Rip Van who? And she said, Rip Van Winkle. And I said, who do you mean? She said, Micheál. She said, that fella. Pretends he fell asleep 15 years ago and has no idea what's been going on since. Not voting for that, he's a chancer. And I think...
Are you sure you met this woman?
I did. I have not...
Because she's extraordinarily articulate. I've
moderated some of the language, Katie. Okay. And I've told that story 4 or 5 times since I walked away from it because... It was one I wish I'd thought of myself. I think there's truth in it.
Unfortunately start dragging up stories like that and worse and whatever it is. I did a fair bit of canvassing for our candidate in Dublin North West. So I won't breach any laws by saying it's Paul McAuliffe. but listening to what people are saying on the door, they really want to see that there's somebody on their side. And I think, false and all, I think Micheál Martin is doing a damn good fist of convincing a reasonable number of the public that what he has in mind to do is doable and achievable and is thought through. And I think people like Michael McGrath, for example, when he goes out, and I saw Jack Chambers, a bit of it last night on Clareburn Live, was one of the most coherent I've heard on climate change in a long time, to be fair to him.
There's a lot of other things being said about Jack Chambers' performance on Clareburn Live last night.
You're not an expert in
coherence
either, Pat, if you believe that.
Well, I don't know.
Okay, touching on housing, and of course we are, but let's have a few clips of what the leaders were saying about housing in the debate tonight. We'll go to Mary Lou MacDonald first. She was really critical of both Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael as being the parties of the developer.
Each in their individual ways, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael have created this crisis. Fianna Fáil was and is the party of property developers, and Fine Gael is the party of landlords. And that reality is reflected in the crisis that we are experiencing. So the state has sat on the sidelines, and it is fair to say that's not just in the course of the last government or the government before. A decision was taken at the highest level and followed through by both of your parties that actually the private market was going to deal with housing.
Okay, Mary Lou MacDonald, you mentioned the rent freeze earlier. Yes. But won't that only cause a proportion of landlords to leave the market? And they're already leaving the market, as we know.
No, I don't believe so. Miriam, the scale of the hike in rents absolutely demands that we intervene. Okay. A great deal of the homelessness that occurs now is people being forced out of the private rental market. You have people who are in good jobs, and not alone are they locked out of ever purchasing their home, they can't afford the rent either. So... The rent freeze is entirely constitutional because it will be time bound for 3 years. So Micheál Martin's flip-flop on this matter lacks any credibility. We have to decide whose side we're on.
And that was Mary Lou MacDonald. Leo Varadkar was adamant in defence of his housing record, compared, that is, to Fianna Fáil and Sinn Féin.
Among my best days as Taoiseach have been going into new housing estates, seeing people who've been on the housing list, our young couples who have bought their first home, getting the keys for their house and going into that house.
There's not enough of them.
You're going to see more and more of them as time goes on because of the changes we've made. But there are some people who think that the housing crisis can't get worse. It can. The rent freeze idea tried in Berlin made things worse.
It hasn't just, been
just froze people,
in Berlin.
Just reduced supply and froze people out of renting altogether. And also we have Micheál Martin here, who can't be trusted on this. He signed off on a Fianna Fáil manifesto full of typos about housing, calling for a rent freeze, which he didn't agree with, and then he blamed it on officials in HQ.
And the Fianna Fáil leader addressed the issue of children in homelessness.
I met with Brother Kevin about 3 years ago. He was told he was looking for a childcare worker to help with the children in his centre. And he was told by the government that he wouldn't need a childcare worker. It'll be sorted next year. You remember Simon Coveney saying he would sort it out in a year. Instead, homelessness rocketed. It is a scandal.
On your watch, Micheál.
We didn't do what you did, collapse government, collapse institutions. People realise, the point I'm making, when I go out and talk to people, they're ashamed of Ireland.
And that was Micheál Martin. Oisín Coughlan, your sense there from those exchanges, like, who has the best story to tell here?
I mean, I think I find it ironic a bit that Micheál Martin is caught between trying to portray himself as the change candidate, but trying to contrast with Fine Gael. I actually think there's a bigger contrast between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael now than in most elections, because given that the social liberal issues have essentially been resolved at the constitutional level, we're left with the economic ones. And Fine Gael have, this is the second election where they have positioned themselves to the centre-left compared to Fine Gael. So there's a greater contrast. In the past, that might have been the case, but they were seen as more conservative socially. So the contrast is stronger, but he's having trouble distinguishing himself for Fine Gael because he's supplied confidence, so to speak, for the last 4 years. So he's caught in that bind. And I don't know if, I think that might put a ceiling on his support. I think those 25 to 34-year-olds where there's double the support, like there's more support for Sinn Féin than for Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael combined, don't buy Micheál Martin as the candidate of change. They may not remember 2008 and they may not remember him in cabinet, but they don't see him as the person who can deliver real contrast to Leo Varadkar.
Isn't that the biggest, and looking at Leo Varadkar's there again, defending the record. Again, we've heard over and over again now there was this number of houses being built when we came in. We only had the money in the last 2 years. We've doubled the output.
Yeah,
all of
doubled
this.
In the last 2 years, yeah.
The difficulty, though, is, and again today, their response to that poll today was that press conference with Pascal Dunhu and Simon Coveney, where it was the doomsayers, basically. It was it was the old PD thing. Don't throw it all away.
Well, it was putting it into context.
Look at what we've done here. We've balanced the books. And I'm thinking, if you're sitting in a tiny apartment that you're sharing with two other people, you're spending 40, 50, maybe more of your income on rent, you're in a precarious job, you might not think, well, you're thinking, what am I throwing away here? You know, you will be thinking, I want to roll the dice.
See, I think what Leo is...
The question is, should those people feel as though they have anything to risk? Well, yeah, because...
I'm saying, are you speaking to those people if that's your response to what's happening in the course of the trend of this election?
Unfortunately, people don't like complexity. And the truth of the matter is the housing issue in this country. That was inherited by Owen Murphy, a countable mention, and before him, Simon Covey, before him, Alan Kelly. The problem they inherited, the solution to which probably had a 10-year lead-in because of the complexities in this country around planning, around NIMBYism, around the fact that our local authorities have absolutely no ability or competence anymore to actually build the houses that Micheál is talking about at a local. You think so? Dublin City Council has built loads of builders that
we're
using.
As a city councillor, and you should know this yourself, the huge obstacles faced by Dublin City Council when we wanted to build public housing on public land. First of all, government policy didn't want that.
But does the city council have the builders? Does the city council have the builders?
The contractors are out there. There's building contractors building hotels. They're building student accommodation.
You make it sound like the city council has builders just sitting on its hands.
It's
not the case.
I just find your idea that it's complexity. People don't get complexity. Quite patronising. In this city, their parents and grandparents were brought up in housing estates that were built by Dublin Corporation in the 40s and 50s and 60s and 70s.
With no indoor plumbing,
to a high standard. But they were council and social housing provided for the people by the local authorities. There was a policy decision, and Fergus is correct. Originally under a Fianna Fáil government, and followed through by successive governments to move away from the state role in housing and move to a total reliance on the market.
And it takes time.
I'm chairman of the regeneration board in Dolphin House, which is the largest regeneration ongoing in Dublin, in fact in the country at the moment. It's a community of 400 families, brilliant community, brilliant people. We completed phase one after years and years of difficulty with the department. The department, I have to say, under Alan Kelly, was no help to us. We completed phase one eventually. A-rated, 100 A-rated family units at an average cost of 200,000 per unit on city-owned land. We're stuck there. We cannot get approval from the department. We got the approval to get phase one started in a couple of days from Simon Coveney. He turned it around very quickly. Haven't been able to make any further progress. We've now completed an absolutely brilliant purpose-built senior citizens complex built by a housing association. There is no shortage of building contractors or builders of labour or anything. The real shortage is political will and administrative drive.
Where is the blockage then?
It's very difficult without the kind of transparency that you need to get hold of that. If
If I believe what I'm being told by Dublin City Council, the blockage is in the department. Mm. If you believe what you're being told by the department, the City Council isn't up to the job.
But your preamble there seemed to indicate there was a difference when different ministers were in place, that you got no help from Alan Kelly, Simon Coveney.
Really bureaucratic response from the department for years and years. And then Simon Coveney was minister, he turned it around. He was replaced by Owen Murphy, whose heart seems to me to be in the right place. But the bureaucracy is back. They're completely back. So I think there's a question of political drive and political will that you have to change those kind of, you know, big wheels grinding slowly attitudes that exist in that department. It's got to be the most conservative department of state there is, apart, of course, from the dreadful Department of Education. But you need. Real drive,
I too have a small bit of experience in that particular area. It takes drive, and it's a bit more than the minister of the day summoning on a monthly basis the CEOs of the county and city councils of the country and telling them you must get on with it, and then putting a block on everything above 6 million, I think it is. That just isn't possible. Now, the other thing,
I think it's smaller than that. Actually, it's 2 million.
By the way. The other thing is, councillors, you're elected for 5 years, so you shouldn't be looking over your shoulder all the time at, you know, what's going to happen if I allow that little development to go ahead. There are too many people who seem to make a political career out of objecting to every single housing development. I saw the Ballymun Regeneration Project held up by endless challenges to everything, right through to Unborplan and all.
Well, to be fair, we've never had a single objection.
And the judicial review.
But support from councillors.
But I'm just, Fergus, it is built in, unfortunately, in the current council anyway, and several councils throughout the country. And I wish the next Minister for Housing the best of luck in trying to get there.
The subtext seems to be that there is an ideological bar with Fine Gael about building social houses. A quarter of all the houses built in the last year have been social houses. So, you know, that's there. They're being built.
OK, Fergus is probably right.
It's an awfully small number.
Yeah, look, it's still there. But if there was an ideological bar, why would they be built?
Fergus is probably right about how the housing problem started, but elections are not about the past anymore. They're about the future.
So that's true. They always have been about the future.
Yeah, I think that's so true. Like, people are voting in the here and now. They're not thinking about Charlie
McCreevy.
But so
much of the rhetoric of this campaign has been about the past.
Yeah, but, like, I think it's about stories, isn't it? In this debate tonight, I thought, from what we saw of it, Mary Lou McDonald and Micheál Martin were at their best when they were telling stories of people they met. Mary Lou McDonald was talking about rents being off the charts, people living at home into their 30s with their parents. Micheál Martin talking about a nurse not being able to buy a
home.
This
has been the style that Mary Lou McDonald much.
And I think it's a deliberate stay away from detail.
She had a very interesting story about the Special Criminal Court, which went on a bizarre roundabout way of not answering the actual question.
A lot of people...
In that 26% who said they're going to vote for Sinn Féin, I'm sure a lot of them were very interested to hear what her answer was going to be on the Special Criminal Court tonight. And I'm sure a lot of them will be extremely disappointed by her evading that question. And a lot of them will have to rethink their
She didn't evade the question.
Well, Micheál, do you want to say, she was asked several times give a simple yes or no answer to was she for or against the Special Criminal Court. And she gave a very roundabout answer of saying that they were in favour, Sinn Féin was in favour of a review of all the courts, and she was in favour, Sinn Féin was in favour of special powers, would not respond to the very specific question.
She was in favour of courts.
It should be reviewed. The Special Criminal Court, the operation of it should be reviewed. There's no mystery about that. Mm-hmm. I mean, Fine Gael has thrown this issue in an effort to divert.
The people who are going to vote not deserve to understand.
In an effort to divert attention.
I'm in favour of the Special Criminal Court, I would have an awful lot more respect for Mary Lou if she said, I am not in favour of the Special Criminal Court. They don't have one in the UK and they still manage to lock terrorists up. Amnesty is against the Special Criminal Court. If she was honest about her position instead of this dodging around the room, you'd have an awful lot more respect for it.
I'm sure the presence of the Deputy First Minister in Northern Ireland at the PSNI recruitment campaign this morning was entirely coincidental.
Well, I mean, much was made of that, but I mean, in the end of the day, Sinn Féin has a position for a long, long time of support for the PSNI and the progressive reform of policing in the north. So there's nothing really new about that. And the idea that it's some kind of stunt.
I gather the Sinn Féin MLAs en masse didn't reply to their invitations.
Is this coming up on the doorsteps? Mm. You know, I wrote down what Mary Lou said, and as a few people have said, it did take her a long time to get there. She spoke about being in favour of the courts, but supporting the courts.
The reason this is of particular relevance is in relation to the calls that came out after that dreadful story in Drogheda at the beginning of the campaign, and it put this whole issue back on the agenda and close to the centre of the agenda. Sorry, go on, Mary.
No, sorry. I'm just saying that she eventually got to say that abolition was not in our manifesto, but Leo Varadkar had already kind of hit her with the leader of Sinn Féin won't give you a straight answer to a straight question. But I suppose what I'd like to know is this something that comes up in the doorstep, or are people just so focused now on the housing and homelessness and health? That
she was definitely evasive, and she could have answered the question even within the limits of her manifesto. She could have answered it much more straightforwardly, but I'm not convinced it's going to shake those 25%.
It's not coming up in the door. It's one of the reasons why many people are terrified.
We have a potential Taoiseach, in a few weeks' time, unable to answer a straightforward question about whether or not she supports the special protocol.
Leo Varadkar today,
or the official secrets.
Leo Varadkar today was photographed for an Irish Times piece standing in front of a Cumming Ale poster from the 20s with an IRA gunman with a gun in the back of Dev with his master's voice. So they're actually harking back to the scaremongering of the 1930s that they used against Fianna Fáil. I mean, admittedly they're doing it. He was photographed. So they're addressing their core voters. That's what this is about. And it's certainly not coming up on the doorsteps.
Okay, something that is coming up on the doorsteps is we constantly hear health services, waiting lists, trolleys. Let's have a quick listen to how it came up in the debate. Micheál Martin targeted the National Treatment Purchase Fund as the evidence of the government's poor performance. It was a Fianna Fáil policy.
The one mechanism he referenced in patient lists going down, that's because we forced the Treatment Purchase Fund back on them in 2016. And that will take over 100,000 people off the public patient list over the next 5 years. It works. It's proven to work. It works.
It's a short-term fix, though.
It's not. I actually think in between 2002 and 2010, it treated 175,000 public patients. There are people travelling from Kerry and Cork to Belfast to get their cataracts removed. That is crazy stuff.
Leo Varadkar then countered with statistics on more beds.
We reversed the policy of taking hospital beds out of the system. If you pick acute beds, 650, that doesn't include the 200 going in at the moment. If you add in day beds, it's over 1,000. More beds have been added into the system in the past couple of years. That is evidence that we accept that we need more capacity.
And we're back to bed numbers. Health is coming up on the doorsteps, Oisin.
But I'm surprised, given where health has featured in the polling, in the Irish Times poll and the panel-based poll, where it's the top issue, that it hasn't featured more in the public debate, in the media debate. And I wonder, is that because the public just don't think it's solvable and they don't trust anyone to solve it? Whereas on the housing question, they think there are clear policy choices. And because we've only had this crisis for 10 years, they think maybe it's soluble if we try the other set of choices. Like the primetime debate a couple of weeks ago, where we had Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael on one side physically and on market solutions, and the other three parties on the far side. I think people, there was real clarity of choice around housing. So people feel there's something we can vote for that's different there. I think on health, they feel...
But I suppose, again, with all the parties saying we're all for slow and secure, it's sort of kills off a lot of the policy debate that you might have.
I agree. I mean, I think that's one of the issues that is baffling people. What is coming up on the doors, and I find coming up a lot in Fergus, you'd be more expert on this than I am, special needs and the lack of services like therapies of different types for children and so on. I couldn't get over, actually, the number of people who were asking me about where can I get my child who has autism assessed? Mm-hmm. Where can I get them a place once they've reached 7 years of age or chronological age and so on? So it's issues like that that are coming up, I think. They kind of understand that, okay, maybe hip operations and stuff like that, there is a waiting list and, you know, my turn will come or whatever. But this thing about the developmental absences, I think, speech therapy, general therapies, I think, I was surprised. Things were never great in that area.
Fianna Fáil has been accused in these debates, there's been so many on the course of the campaign, of basically going against the spirit and ethos of Sláinte Cathair by throwing the treatment purchase fund at the problem. And pumping what would be €1 billion over the course of 5 years that's the figure that has been bandied about in terms of
the initiative which was brought in when Micheál Martin was Minister for Health himself. Was seen to work at the time, but along with that, there is need for further investment in Sláinte Cathair. Absolutely no doubt about that. There's no point in having a very ambitious document of 10 years or whatever it is, lead-in period, when there is no substantial funding for it.
Yeah, what do you think that point that Oisin made has struck me, not just for this election, but over the last couple of elections, that...
Well, I probably have to preface what I say by saying that I am a member of the board of the HSE, relatively recently appointed, but been there for a few months now. Before I was appointed, I said that the HSE should never have been invented. It was a monster created. And if I was the guy who invented it and designed it and so on, I'm not sure that I would be on the television tonight talking about solutions.
You're not talking about Micheál Martin by any chance, are you, Fergus?
Well, I'm not allowed to talk about the past. We have a health system which employs 140,000 people, most of them incredibly committed and good and so on, but it is an enormous animal of a thing. It's a huge animal of a thing. There's a management team that is committed to reform, but, and I do not want to give you statistics, health systems generally around the world that are good and well coping and so on operate at about 85, 86, 87% hospital capacity. Okay, our hospital system operates at 96% capacity on a good day. So when there's a bad day, it just can't cope. And that the only way you can fix that is more beds or ways to get people out of hospital. That's what Sláinte Cathair is primarily about. Sláinte Cathair is about investing much more in primary care, in enabling people to get their treatment without going into hospital.
But politically, is any of this cutting through with people in terms of,
I think what there is, and I'm not saying this in defence of the HSE, but I think what there is a kind of a general acceptance that these reforms are going to take time. I know what the HSE has found is that the most frustrating thing about working with the health service is access, getting into care. The best thing about it is the quality of care you get once when you're in. I think there is a sense that people reckon that that's worth preserving. But I do think there is a sense that people understand that, and forgive me, I think they understand the complexity of it, that the reform that has to happen will take time. I don't think a generation, to be honest. I mean, we have a 5-year term and we're determined to make a few changes.
We'll get back to you on that. Okay, I'm going to have to take a break. Just one text in there. Lads, nobody cares about the Special Criminal Court bar journalists. We'll take a break.
Email latedebate@rte.ie. The Late Debate with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
And you're welcome back. Now, of course, many of us already have jumped ahead beyond Saturday and we're already trying to put together our fantasy governments. Leo Varadkar was asked tonight about coalition options. This was his response.
That rather than have no government or have a second election, that in that circumstance and only that circumstance, I'd be willing to work with Fianna Fáil as a last resort in the interest of the country. What I won't do is negotiate a coalition with Sinn Féin. I'm concerned about their past, but I'm much more concerned about the present and the future.
If ever you heard a clarion call of desperation, that's it. What's very telling here and it is the fact that Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are ad idemen saying we can't have Sinn Féin. And what's the reason for that? The reason for that is that they want it still all their own way.
Their policy platform is full of gaps and holes in it. Real issues. They're getting rid of the Help to Buy scheme. You take the abolition of property tax. They've only put, they're replacing that with 30 million to local authorities. That's 450 million cut to local authority funding.
And that was the leaders on primetime talking about coalition options. It has struck me, Fergus, I'll ask you this, that there had been such a focus on not talking to Sinn Féin from the get-go of this campaign. And there was that whole schmozzle around whether Mary Lou McDonough would be invited into this debate tonight, that it sort of fed a huge momentum of the exactly as Mary Lou McDonald was setting out there, these are the lads inside with the keys to the kingdom and they don't want to let us in. Do you think that they actually inadvertently drove this narrative?
Oh, I've no doubt about that. In fact, if I can coin a phrase from the past, she has emerged as the real leader of the opposition. Micheál Martin, in that context, is irrelevant as a leader of the opposition. He's out there campaigning, defending his record over the command and supply, or whatever the hell it's called, confidence and supply.
I bet he wishes it was command and supply.
And I don't even know. I never understood what the term supply means in that context. And I
money.
Supply of money. Okay. I mean, like, everybody, I think, knows at this stage that there are only two reasonable scenarios after this election. One of them is a government involving Sinn Féin, and the other is a Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael government.
Are we all agreed on that?
For what it's worth, and Sinn Féin will never take advice from me, it's in Sinn Féin's best interest to try and force a Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael government and to lead a coalescing of opposition over the next couple
and
of years.
And don't Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael know well that that would be politically disastrous for them,
I don't want to hug the floor. They might. But Leo Varadkar is finished if he's not in government, and so is Micheál Martin. And that's a powerful incentive. Yeah.
What do you think, Micheál?
Yeah, well, I mean, our position, what we want to do is implement our policies. We want to bring about the change that we have.
Okay, we'll take it as read.
The mandate we will receive.
Yeah.
It's up to the voters. I mean, not a vote has been cast. We've had the polls. We need people to come out on Saturday and to vote Sinn Féin.
Listening and watching the body language over the last couple of weeks, it does seem that the needle between Mary Lou McDonald and Micheál Martin goes deeper and is more raw than whatever differences have been pointed out between herself and Leo Varadkar. Even in that one of those debates, I heard her saying a couple of times, "I agree with Leo." There's been a few complimentary remarks from Fine Gael.
I think
candidates up and down the country about
that. Even Leo Varadkar has a better position than Micheál Martin on this particular issue. Was the point? But I think that
they appear not to like each other. A bit like Des O'Malley and Charlie Hoggie one time.
No, but it is the lowest scoring in the Irish Times poll.
Which one is the lowest one? Is Fine Gael? Sinn Féin is the lowest.
Yeah, but it points up the position that Micheál Martin has put himself in, where he was in this confidence and supply agreement, and yet he's trying to project himself as an agent of change. There was a very interesting phrase in the Irish Times editorial, which I very rarely quote, but today it says, "It appears that the confidence and supply agreement between Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil has had the unanticipated outcome of binding the two parties more closely in the minds of unaligned voters while casting Sinn Féin in the role of primary alternative." Now, the interesting word I thought there was unanticipated. Now, but how could you not anticipate?
And it was anticipated. I remember it was discussed openly at the time.
But it seems that Micheál Martin didn't anticipate it.
Well, I don't know.
I just
wonder, I mean, what did Sinn Féin do to enable a government to be formed after the last election? Sat on their hands.
But nobody would talk.
Well, I didn't try very hard to talk to anybody else either.
We were available to speak to parties.
You set out a red line, which was that you would only enter government that you were the lead party in.
But I think, I mean, the public at the time...
Was a pretty big fat red line.
There was a lot of critique of Sinn Féin for not doing more to form a government. And yet the parties were saying as they are now, but we wouldn't go in with them. Yeah. So like that seemed to be we couldn't have it both ways.
And the ruling out, as you say, has backfired, I think, on the parties we used to call the big two parties.
Not just ruling out when you were asked, but ruling out like telling people every 10 minutes.
Yeah.
By the way, did I mention again, I'm not going
But it's become a base election for the two bigger parties rather than a...
Exactly.
Options. And Fergus, you outlined the very few that exist.
But Leo Varadkar and Micheál Martin, can I just say, have used up their precious TV soundbite moments on the 6 o'clock news or the 9 o'clock news, talking about Sinn Féin being in government. It's incredible to me. It's a very, you know, why aren't they projecting a positive message
also
for themselves?
Also making it a plausible scenario, in a funny
yes,
way.
Almost making it a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Well, I mean, if this is seen as the election of change and voters see Sinn Féin as the change, that Micheál and Leo come across as arguing against change.
But I suppose the reality is Sinn Féin is the one party that hasn't been tried and tested in the Republic. You know, all the other permutations have been gone through. Even the Greens, it's not their first rodeo. You know, they've been involved in an ill-fated government.
What about the fact that many of these parties, whatever happens after this campaign is over and we're putting, everyone's doing the maths and getting their abacus out, They will have to go back to party members. Isn't what are the in Sinn Féin? Is it a full party membership vote? What is it?
Yes, no. It's a delegates at an Ardesh.
Right.
If there is any kind of decision to go into government and a partnership agreement or programme for government, it has to go. The decision has to go to the delegates elected by the party throughout the country at a special Ardesh.
And will the delegates do what they're told? By the shadowy men by Mary Lou MacDonald.
There's no shadowy figures. In fact, I'm a member of the Ard Corla.
Shadowy figures only come play after cabinet.
So if you want to call me a shadowy figure, I'm a member of the Ard Corla, but here I am. So it's a decision, a democratic. We're a democratic party, the same as every other party. We have a national executive, we have an Ard Corla, we have an annual convention, an annual conference. And in fact, we're more democratic than some other parties where policy decisions are not made by the party at all. They're made solely by the parliamentary party.
Even if Micheál Martin decided next week that this is it, this is do or die, and the only way I can make the numbers up is to go into government with Sinn Féin, despite everything that was said, could he get that through?
Through whom?
Well, I mean, could he bring his people with him, basically?
Could Micheál Martin persuade the Fianna Fáil parliamentary party to go into government with Sinn Féin?
Yeah.
It's not just the parliamentary party. I think there's a special Ardesh which would be required to do that. I haven't been at an Ardesh.
If he was suggesting they go for Teddy's ice cream on Dunleary Pier, he'd have a bigger battle. If the alternative is
what about Leo Varadkar? Would he be able to persuade the membership that this is a good idea?
To go into coalition with Sinn Féin or Fianna Fáil?
Well, he's already acknowledged that if push came to shove, he would support Fianna Fáil in that scenario. But if it was an actual government with Sinn Féin,
I don't think that's even a possibility. The economic policies alone are just so contradictory that it wouldn't even become an issue.
I've heard this before. But
Fianna Fáil has already been on the cards and offered.
Okay, AB Philbin Bowman has joined us. He's been watching and not just watching the debate, but watching the reaction to the debate online. What's the sense of it as we're coming to the
As very often happens with these things, Twitter itself is obsessed with something utterly ephemeral, which is an expression David McCullough made before the break. It's going mad about that. But in terms of content,
which expression?
Oh, he just had a strange look when Miriam said we're coming to health questions after the break, and he gave an expression which has been video clipped millions of times by, and that's what everyone will be talking about apparently in the drugs moment of last week.
Let us in on the secret.
But it's radio. It's hard to explain facial expression. No, you'll see it yourself. It's sort of a smirk. But anyway, the point is the rest. The rest of the discussion is just party people having, you know, goes at their favourite. So, for example, on Mary Lou MacDonald, someone said, for a party leader who's supposed to be the revolutionary change maker, Mary Lou sounding most like the traditional politician, impossible to get a straight answer on the Special Criminal Court and going into government with Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. On Leo Varadkar, when Varadkar says he's only had 2 years to sort out housing or health because he took 7 years to deal with Fianna Fáil's mess. Remember, it was 2014, 6 years ago, he announced his first tax cuts for the wealthy. And on Micheál Martin, has Micheál Martin forgotten about the 16-hour trolley waiting times? Look at this article from the Irish Times in the year 2000, which shows very long trolley.
So any sense who might be coming out on top?
Twitter, as ever, is either partisanly divided. It's basically the winner of the debate is the person you supported at the beginning of the debate and or David McCullough's smirk. You decide, depending on what end of Twitter you want to spend your time hanging out in.
But definitely no clear winner or clear loser.
The most interesting comment I saw so far was actually someone tweeting from the press room that they could overhear the mics behind the stage before it began, and Leo Varadkar was apparently complaining that his podium was too low, and there was mild panic with some scuff marks on the floor, but it was all apparently all sorted out and seems to be fine now.
Okay, AV Philbin Bowman, thank you for that. Oh, no mention of climate change.
still no mention of climate change. And of course, people who presume that's the biggest issue are tweeting, isn't it disgraceful, the climate change? They've gone
for a quality rather than
they haven't fit everything in. They've got really deep into housing and health and tax and finances, and that's how they've decided to do it.
Okay, and I'm going to have to take my last break here.
Email latedebate@rte.ie. The Late Debate with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
And I'm afraid that's it for tonight. I want to thank my panel for joining me and dissecting what we could from that debate tonight. And of course, AB for bringing out that update. The producer tonight was Regina Henley. Broadcast coordinator was Cathal Minogue. Research was by AB Philbin-Bowman, and on sound, Nikki Dempsey.